You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Kelvin Butenoff coming to you live from our home at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text or leave a voice note at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up next half hour, after the 10:30 news, we're going to lighten it up with sports. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports guru J.R. Radcliffe will be here to talk all things sports, and we'll wrap up the show as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing, Halloween themed this week. Today it is the Great Runaway Pumpkin Edition. Stay tuned for that. Right now we are delighted to be joined by Hans Breitenmoser. He's a regular guest on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Delighted to have him join us. He's a dairy farmer and a beef producer in Lincoln County. Good morning, Hans. Thanks so much for making time for us.
Good morning, Jane. Of course. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. Lots of things going on. We can start with beef. Let's start with talking about beef and our beef producers. I found it kind of interesting, Hans, that the president of the United States essentially said that beef producers just don't get it. If they only understood as well as he does the industry, then beef producers wouldn't be upset.
I love that little laugh he had when you said that.
Your reaction?
Well, I think Greg got my reaction. Really? You know, can you give us a little bit of credit out here for maybe having some grasp on what our reality is? The beef situation is as follows. And I'm going to get into the beef weeds here a little bit and may bore you with this, but here's what's happening in the beef world. The beef the beef cow herd is as small as it's been in the history of forever. It's smaller than it's been since like the 1950s. And so what that does is that creates some opportunities for those of us who produce beef. So I'm a dairy farmer, and of course, once a dairy cow, you know, loses her ability to continue producing milk efficiently and effectively, she becomes, ground beef. Typically, we also produce a lot of little black calves, Angus Holstein cross calves, that go into the beef side of things, and leave the dairy world and go into the beef world to get raised up, to become the steaks and the roasts and all the things that we love. And so because that beef cow herd is smaller than it's been in a long time, that has created a supply issue, and the demand hasn't gone away, even though prices are higher in the stores. And in the dairy world, that's been a good thing for us because the milk prices are terrible. And so if I can have a little extra income by a higher value cull cow or those little black terminal crosses that we create that we don't need for replacements, that definitely helps my bottom line. And it definitely helps rural economies. So for the president to say, well, we're going to solve all the consumers' problems by sending a bunch of money to Argentina just doesn't make any sense, because it doesn't help those of us in production ag. And it's really not going to help the consumers either, because number one, the consumers' tax dollars get frittered away and sent south of the border for something that's really not going to improve their prices at the store anyways. If you truly want to improve consumers' lives and make their lives better while not hurting producers, we should be focused on antitrust legislation in this country and busting up the four great big companies Yes. that are multinational corporations that are raising your prices. And if you think for one second that introducing a bunch of Argentinian beef is going to help your price at Walmart, you're kidding yourself. Because guess what the Walmarts of the world understand? They understand what people are willing and able to pay for a product, mm-hmm. and they're not going to lower the prices. They're just going to be a fatter margin for the people in between. So my prices aren't going to improve yep. in terms of higher prices for my product. And I promise you, consumers, you will not pay less at the store with this. You're just going to pay extra taxes.
Well, and we're going to get to the whole hoof and mouth thing with Argentinian beef, because that's a whole separate thing. But I think it's important that people realize, like you said, Hans, let's go back a little bit. One of the reasons, from my understanding, that herds are smaller goes back a number of years to when we had extreme drought in mm-hmm. some parts of the country, right? And it was very expensive for beef producers to keep feeding their cattle. It was cheaper for them to send them to slaughter. And that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons why our beef price or our beef herds shrunk was related to this drought from several years ago, right?
Yes. Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. I mean, that's one part of it, but that's a big part of it. And to add on to that is the average beef, the average cow calf guy is, you know, sort of my age or older. So, you know, you're talking 60 plus years old average, right? So there's a lot of people in that industry that have been in an industry for a long time and are looking at their situation and saying, wow, these beef cows are worth a lot of money. I don't have enough feed and I'm of a certain age. It's silly for me not to pull the trigger. So that beef cow goes off to slaughter, which adds beef to the market immediately. But guess what? That beef cow doesn't get bred with a calf
right.
that is going to then become that beef steer. So her productive life is over and the beef cow herd shrinks as a result. So there's demographic issues, there's weather issues. And I understand we're going to talk about this at some point too. There's the labor issue, because guess what? It takes somebody to actually feed all those animals yep. and do all the things.
If you're just joining us on Matt and Air on Air, we are speaking with Hans Breitenmoser, who is a Lincoln County dairy farmer, a beef producer, a friend of Civic Media, and we are talking about the announcement last week. And really, and if I'm not mistaken, too, it was really kind of off the cuff. I feel like his staff was behind the scenes going, what did he just say? Is that
they are going to do that every day.
They're going to start buying Argentinian beef because apparently we are investing as a partner, a corporate partner in Argentinian. Wow. Good Lord. Whether it's $40 billion or giving our money to buy their beef. But you are a beef producer, and I imagine you talk to other people in the industry, and whether it's cattle throughout the country and the state. What are you hearing from them on this? I mean, because like I have to imagine, regardless of who they voted for, this was not something they expected. Like, we've seen tariffs cause bailouts. We've seen farmers seem to vote against their interests, but this is one where he said, we're going to start buying Argentinian beef. And I have to imagine y'all were like, what?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think there is a lot of that. Wait, what?
Yeah.
That's the reaction. I mean, I think it takes a long time for people's voting reflexes to change, which is to say, you know, the quote red parts of our country are still pretty darn red. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting how many questionable or straight up poor decisions the administration can make, and how many, rather than converts to more progressive politics, but you know, it tends to create apologists for the administration, mm-hmm. or you know, people willing to make excuses and say, well, you know, this is somehow part of some magic strategy that's
long-term
going to plan. Yeah, yeah. And it's so interesting because I feel like, you know, other administrations in the past didn't get away with that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if anything happened, came out of the Biden administration or the Obama administration or even a Bush administration, it was like, you know, people would jump on it immediately and say, what in the wide world of sports is going on? So there is a difference because of this, I'm going to say, cultish kind of situation here. But yeah, I mean, you know, and the other interesting thing is that, you know, one wonders how much of this has to do with some concern over consumer prices in this country and how much of it has to do with the fact that there's a political ally in Argentina. If he wasn't in bed with the Argentinian president, we wouldn't be having this conversation. You know what I'm saying? If that guy, a huge, you know, Trump fan, then, you know, this deal wouldn't have happened to begin with. So it's frustrating because I just don't see a lot of congressional oversight here either. There's an opportunity for people in Congress to say, wait, hold on. This is a terrible idea. And I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. It's poor public policy.
Yeah, it's bad for our farmers who, you know, our politicians love to raise up on a pedestal anytime they want to get elected.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no end to the hero worship in my industry. And I mean, I'm proud to produce food. Mm-hmm. You know, I really am. I sincerely am. But it becomes more frustrating when you have an administration who doesn't understand how that whole system works. And I'm the last guy that wants consumers to pay through the nose when they go and they want to buy a pound of hamburger or a steak. But that's my frustration here. I mean, if I could honestly sit here and say, well, okay, the good news is that Jane and Greg are going to get cheaper food at the store, then it would be a little bit easier for me to swallow this. But that's not what's going to happen. Right. I promise you that simply won't happen. So what has been gained other than bailing out, a guy in Argentina who's struggling politically?
Well, and one of the reasons, Hans, that we're bailing out this guy in Argentina is because a member of the Trump administration has a really wealthy friend who bought up debt in Argentina, who really needs Argentina to recover so he gets his investment back. Let's go back a little bit to the four big there's the four big producers. They're the ones who process the meat. As you said, there are only four of them in the country that control all of this. And one of the biggest ones is Brazilian owned. And yet we never, ever hear that talked about.
No, we don't. And it's so strange because I feel like from a policy standpoint and how to improve the lot of rural America, this would be a fairly easy one to tackle. So you've got basically a monopoly in the meatpacking industry and they're multinational companies. And when you layer that monopoly on top of the retail grocery situation, sort of, and how that's monopolized, it just straight up doesn't do any good for producers and it doesn't do any good for consumers. And antitrust legislation, by God, is something that everybody, regardless of how you feel about, guns or the minimum wage or anything else. I mean, I feel like that's something that all policymakers should be able to get behind because you see the impacts of it and the impacts are broad. But I think, at the risk of going down another rabbit trail, you're also talking about money and politics when you start talking about antitrust legislation.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and honestly, Hans, I love having you on the show because you just say so many amazing things, and I forgot what I was going to ask you because we wouldn't have time anyway, so I'm just going to let Jane take it from here because my brain is falling apart because I read the news all the time.
I wanted to share this.
See, usually somebody asks me a very simple question, and I ramble for, a half an hour, and I forgot the question that they asked to begin with.
So. Sir, would you like fries with that? That's all I was asking.
Yeah, exactly. I was going through the drive-thru, and half an hour later.
I wanted to share this with you real quickly before we go to break. Carolyn Leavitt, who is the spokesperson for the White House, talking about America's beef producers. They're struggling because of the many horrible policies of the previous administration.
Of course.
Is that your lived experience that this is all because of Biden? I'm just checking.
No. Beef prices were going up during that four-year period as well. But again, it has to do with simple math, right? It has to do with in order to produce a beef steer, that steer has to be born, 14, 18, 20 months ago, depending on breed, et cetera, et cetera. And that has to come from a cow. And if that cow doesn't exist, she can't have the calf that becomes the steer. That has nothing to do with who's in the White House.
That is so logical. That's making head explode. It's all across
science.
Washington. Ugh. They're just trying to accept the logic of that. We're going to continue our conversation with Hans Breitenmoser. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go away.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We're joined by Hans Breitenmoser, a dairy farmer and beef producer in Lincoln County. And Hans, we had Troy from Mount Horeb has been waiting very patiently on the phone. Troy, what did you want to say real quickly, please?
Hi, real quick. The Kansas City Star wrote an article about how tariffs were gutting farmers, and a farmer from El Dorado said that farmers aren't blaming Trump for the tariffs, and I said they should. And he said back to me, no, sir, farmers are doing better right now than the majority of Biden's 4 years. Don't open your mouth about something you know nothing about. Is that true?
Thank you, Troy. Great question. Great question.
Yeah. I'm gonna tend to disagree with your friend.
Yeah.
Not your lived experience.
Not my lived experience. Milk prices are not great. I'm a consumer and producer of corn and beans. And so the lower prices that we're seeing for commodities like corn and soybeans are helpful to the dairy world because we feed those products. But you know, we're a lot of us do both. And so it's a kind of a double-edged sword there. And the beef prices, again, are high, but they have nothing to do with this administration or the last administration. It's a simple
supply and demand, you know, right?
Yeah. It's supply and demand, and it has, again, to do with the demographics of the average age of the beef producers and the weather that we've had out west and in some of these places where they're, you know, the cow-calf herds exist.
Over the past few months, we've been hearing from various farmers, and some farmers say there's no resentment, no problems amongst their peers and their colleagues and whatnot. And then we talk to other farmers who say they're hopping mad. And then we got people who are mad at Trump, and then they get what they want. And then they're not mad at Trump anymore. And I feel like when you ask a person to speak on behalf of a whole group, farmers aren't a monolith. Everyone has different thoughts and feelings, right. And they're going to do and say what they want. And that's for them to do. So, yeah, I mean, but I can't imagine that. But the notion that it's better than Biden, it's like that. I need more proof than that. But one of the things we wanted to talk about, though, with you, Hans, is you went to D.C. last week to talk about sensible immigration reform. Mm-hmm. Because as you've spoken on Pat's show and on our show, that this mission on behalf of the government to rid ourselves of the immigrants in this country is really doing damage to the farming industry. And guess what? We talked about that for a while now.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was in D.C. last week with an organization called ABIC, which stands for American Business Immigration Coalition. And basically, ABIC is a bunch of folks who are business owners and represent different business interests, ag, hospitality, you know, construction, you name it. The medical world as well, and our elder care type world as well. So the reason why ABIC exists is because ABIC and its members understand that, again, it's kind of a simple math problem. We don't have enough young people compared to the number of old people that we have.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, to put it in a dairy farmer's sort of lingo, our breeding program sucked 20 years ago, and therefore we didn't produce enough babies. And there's not enough 20-year-olds to fill the positions. Now, we can't unring that bell.
Right.
And this isn't a Democratic problem or a Republican problem. It's a simple math problem. Your breeding program isn't any good and you don't produce enough young people.
Yeah.
It at some point it's going to bite you in the rear end. So. And as our population in this country ages from a lower birth rate and from longer life expectancy, you've got more and more people entering a stage of their life where they're not producing any widgets, whether that's beef for the grocery store or whatever it is. And you also at the same time have a population who needs care from other people.
Yes.
Right. So that puts everybody in a bind. So we've seen that in the ag world for years and years and years, and everybody else is seeing as well. So ABIC's job and those of us who went along went there to tell our stories to legislators and to try and help them understand, that this is a math problem that we can't get over anytime too soon internally. And the good news is we've got people from all over the world who would like to come into this country and lots of them that are already in this country and would like the legal authorization to work here. They're not looking for citizenship. They're not looking for any handouts. They're really just wanting to be able to do their work. And again, in many cases, work that they've been doing for 10, 15, 20 years,
yeah.
And to be able to do that without, getting any aggravation from, you know, the heavy hand of ICE.
It almost seems like the individuals who want to come into this country want to do it in a legal, logical way so they can work and provide. And yet still, even when they do it the legal, logical way, they're still getting thrown out of this country, and it's harming Absolutely. Our farmers.
Well, and as you said, too, there's this big push now under the Trump administration. We need to start, we need more babies. We're under-babied. Everybody should have more babies. Well, even if we start that assembly line now, as you said, that's going to take 20 years.
Exactly. No, and I'm not anti-babies. I've got five children of my own. But again, it's what do you do between now and then?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Who's going to take care of grandma between now and then? Who's going to milk the cows between now and then? Who's going to, you know, build the buildings and do the, you know, all of these things? I mean, I heard all sorts of interesting comments. The elder care industry, for example, is really getting hit hard because their average age is like 55. So some of these people are leaving that industry and turning right around and requiring the care that industry
that they just
provides.
Served. Hans Breitenmoser is a dairy farmer and beef producer in Lincoln County. Thank you so very much, Hans. We really, really appreciate your time.
You bet. My pleasure. Thank you.
Stay with us. News is next, and then we'll lighten it up with a little audio sorbet and all things sports with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe. Don't go away. You're listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, Calvitini on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us, call or text. The number is the same at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll wrap up the show with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it is the Great Runaway Pumpkin Edition. Halloween-themed tisbets all this week. Right now, though, he joins us every other Thursday to talk all things sports. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports guru, J.R. Radcliffe, is here. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Happy Halloween, guys.
Happy Halloween. I want to talk about Trey Yesavage.
God bless you.
I am so happy for this kid. I heard about it this morning, and I was like, you go, Trey. Go, kid.
Yeah, every few years, somebody pops up in the World Series who just doesn't have very much big league baseball experience. And, you know, whether it's because the kid just doesn't know any better, rising to the moment, or, you know, probably more likely they don't have a lot of film on him. They haven't really figured him out yet as a big league pitcher. We saw this with David Price a while back. Michael Wacha with the St. Louis Cardinals had such an amazing rookie run. And this year it's Trey Yesavage, who is a strikeout machine. You know, even when I think in game five, when he struck out 12 Dodgers over seven innings, I don't even think his command was that good, but he dominated. The Dodgers have looked really sort of lethargic, really, even in the Brewers series. They only scored 15 runs in four games. That's, you know, if you're talking less than four runs a game, that's a beatable team offensively. And obviously the pitching was what separated the Dodgers then, but like, right now, the pitching hasn't been as good, and Toronto has sort of done the things you would think Milwaukee could do. And yeah, Trey Yesavage, what a great story. I mean, what a nails performance. This is a kid who pitched at A-ball a lot this year. You know, below, you know, the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, as an example, are advanced Class A. So he pitched at advanced Class A, and also the level below that for a lot of this year, low A. And then he ended up getting a little bit of experience at double, a little bit of experience at triple, and they brought him up for the last two weeks of the regular season. So he only has 2 weeks of big league baseball under his belt, goes right into the postseason, and then ends up having just a tremendous showing. This is not his first good game in the postseason. He was really, really good in a previous round as well. So really, really fun story. It's something that happens every fall. Somebody busts through, I would say.
Well, and I saw something this morning that said that he made like $57,000 last year, and he's taken on the Dodgers, which has got the biggest payroll in the league, right? And then just smoked him. So did he just come out and just, they were so confused? Is that what it was?
They looked confused. Yeah. You know, and the $57,000 is a little misleading. That's what he made as a big leaguer this year. That's 2 weeks of salary at the big league level. So and that might've included his minor league pay this year. Although I think there's probably a little bit more there, but I mean, he just hasn't been here that long. Mm-hmm. And I think you see that sometimes with a team that just hasn't faced somebody who throws like that and doesn't, you know, hasn't figured him out yet. I don't think anybody, you know, Trey Yesavage was a pretty well-known prospect in baseball coming out of East Carolina, but he wasn't like a top five pick or anything. Right. So there is still a pretty cool story here. It's just that, you know, I don't think anybody is saying this is the next great pitcher in big league baseball necessarily. I think he's just gotten hot. And I mean, he'll still be very good. You know, he'll certainly be in the rotation next year for the Blue Jays, and he'll be a big piece of what they do going forward. And maybe he is the next great pitcher, but I really think this is just a case where they haven't seen him very much. They haven't figured him out very much. And he's just taking advantage of that right now.
I'm sorry to derail the fun train of World Series victories. And I love his story, but I want to talk about the fact that what you just said, as far as the Dodgers and how much they scored against the Brewers in the NLCS, and ask a question of you: do the Brewers have a postseason problem? Is that something you can actually look at from a analytic standpoint, say we completely smoke them in the regular season, and we go to the postseason a lot, but we don't make it very far. Do the Brewers have a postseason problem?
I think coming into this, you know, this postseason, before they'd won a series in the last 7 years, you could have said that. You could have. It isn't enough data. It rarely is when we're talking postseason. There's never one thing that leads a team to victory. There's never one stat that says, well, if the teams that homer the most always win, or the teams that have the best pitching always win. It's just, you get down to these just handful of games, and it just never is that simple. Mm-hmm. So I think what this series has told me, you know, because I really did look at that Dodger series with the Brewers and said to myself, the Brewers can't beat this. I mean, they could have played better, but they cannot beat those four pitchers at that level. And I still think to some degree that's true. Those pitchers pitched really well. And when you have guys who are that, you know, that expensive and that talented, if they pitch well, you're probably not going to beat them. They have not pitched as well in this series, and the Blue Jays have taken advantage of it. The Blue Jays have played better than the Brewers did, no questions asked. Like they just, you know, they've kept their sort of pass the baton mentality, and yeah, they have worked really long at bats. The Brewers kind of got out of that. They started swinging out of the zone a lot, and that ultimately I think was a big part of their undoing. But I do think this is a reminder that the Brewers can do this in the postseason. They are equipped. They are talented enough. And I think if you play that series again, I do think the results are different. I don't know if the Brewers beat the Dodgers. I don't really think in my heart of hearts there's any scenario where in those four games you play them again, the Brewers win that series. I don't think they do. But I do think next year you come back in the same situation, and the chips probably fall completely differently just because it is a small sample and because the Brewers are legitimately that talented. Mm-hmm. It is now nice that they have a postseason series win under their belt. They can build on that. They don't have to worry about getting a monkey off their back if that's what they think. They can come back next year and, you know, stronger than ever, I guess, in position to in fact, go one step further in 2026.
If you're just joining us, we are speaking with Journal Sentinel. Wow, words are tough today, Jane.
Words are tricky.
Journal Sentinel sports writer and our sports guru, J.R. Radcliffe, and we are talking about all things Wisconsin sports, as we do every Thursday. And, yeah, I mean, that's that. Thank you for saying that, because it's very hard to come. If the Brewers would have lost 4-3 or even 4-2, I think there'd be less
angst,
well, heft on my shoulders, because this is all about me. But when you see it just happen, 1-2-3-4, done, moving on, and that, you know, it was hard to keep hope alive as well in like game three, where you're like, they're playing so poorly that they don't just wake up and have a good bowl of cereal and all the things come together. There is a malfunction here happening that they have to address now, between now and the spring training. But you're right. Not only did we get to the postseason, not only did we make it to the NLCS, we made it to the NLCS, we made it to the NLDS with a bye, and we did all the good things, got home field, best record. I have to keep telling myself that, and I think that's something very uniquely Brewers or small market team, where you have to remind yourself how good you are when you did well.
And I mean, in baseball, there are haves and have-nots. You know, the Dodgers have been to the World Series a bunch lately. So, the Houston Astros were on a run here. Like, the Brewers are disadvantaged. It's not like everybody's on a level playing field. They're not. The Brewers are, in fact, they do need stars to align to get to the World Series. So that can be frustrating as a Brewers fan to know that, you know, all things being equal, you're still probably at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. But the Brewers have done everything they can in the model that they've been given. You know, they've really built it. They won 97 games. regular season doesn't always translate to the postseason, especially because the postseason takes place after you've played 162 games. Yeah. Guys get tired, guys get hurt, and that can have a disproportionate effect if you're a team built on kind of everybody doing their part. Well, if everybody's tired, you don't have that one guy who's going to slug a three-run homer and save the day against a really top-flight pitcher. So that's maybe something they can address with their roster. But this Dodgers team is fallible. Like they were fallible in the regular season. They were not at full strength when the Brewers beat them 6 out of 6 times. They didn't have Blake Snell and Shohei Ohtani pitching. So that's kind of a caveat, but they're fallible. Like Mookie Betts had a really rough up and down year. He's one of their star players. He hasn't been doing anything. And Shohei Ohtani, as great as he was in that one game against the Brewers, has actually been pretty quiet in this postseason. Like, they have vulnerabilities like every team does. It's just a matter of having the stars align and being able to take advantage of those opportunities.
Well, go Jays. I would like to see.
Of course,
I want the Blue Jays to beat the Dodgers, and then things will be right with
go
the world.
Canada.
Somebody else other than the Dodgers.
Yeah,
We're talking to J.R. Radcliffe from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Let's move over to sports. We beat our ex-boyfriend, or football, we beat our ex-boyfriend. Ha, 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 ha.
Are we talking about the Brewers beating Craig Council?
Or no, now we're talking about Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers.
Excellent. Just a tremendous performance by Jordan Love. He's the NFC Offensive Player of the Week, 360 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and played the way that I bet Aaron Rodgers trained him to play, like to take the right opportunities and, throw the ball down the field. Never took a sack, was able to evade the pressure when it did come. And just a masterclass performance from Jordan Love. And something I think we've kind of been waiting for. Like he's been good. The stats say he's good, but the Packers haven't really let him cook. They've really, really focused on that running game and stayed a little bit conservative. And I think there were times that bit them this year. There were times where they could have opened up a bigger lead and, stayed conservative and it cost them against Cleveland in particular is kind of what I'm thinking of. So they didn't do that. The running game wasn't on point. Josh Jacobs is a little banged up and they just made it, put the game on the back of Jordan Love. And he absolutely delivered, spread the ball around. Tucker Kraft with an incredible game. He's probably the best tight end in football and on the very short list if he's not at the top. So that's a really great development. Christian Watson coming back is a huge, huge development. Really gives them a dimension they have not had in the passing game. Jaden Reed is going to be back soon. A lot to like. I mean, that was and all of it against Aaron Rodgers, who will probably never beat the Green Bay Packers now in his career.
Aww.
Sad. You hate to see it. Aww. You just hate to see it.
What a darn shame, she says, smiling.
Jane, your vindictiveness is
dripping?
It's dripping off your chin right now.
Let me wipe that off. That's very unattractive.
I mean, and this is something that a lot of Packers fans and analysts have been talking about, the fact that, the season definitely started rough. I mean, tie. I'm more shocked by tie than loss, but it seems like that's what they're doing. They're picking up the pieces right now and they're moving forward. They are number one in the NFC, in the NFC North by a little bit, tied, but 5 wins for both the Lions and the Packers. But if they keep moving this forward, they can really put some daylight between those stats and do the work that needs to be done, especially if they're letting Jordan throw the ball.
Yeah, they're the number one team in the NFC overall right now, but it's by a really narrow margin. Mm-hmm. They could easily be the 6th team, based on how things fall within a week or two. So there's some pretty good teams, Detroit among them, Tampa Bay, Los Angeles. Like there's some Philadelphia, who's a team that's on their schedule. They haven't looked great. They look pretty beatable, actually, as the reigning Super Bowl champs, but they also have a very good record. I mean, these are teams that the Packers have to keep an eye on. So just because they're out to this good start does not mean that they're guaranteed a playoff spot. They're going to have to keep working on it. The Bears are one of those teams that's kind of right on the fringe that they're going to have to take care of business against them. So this is not a holy smokes, this team is in the clear now, but I do think we've seen the Super Bowl caliber team. The defense has been quite good. Micah Parsons is such a difference maker, and they've had hiccups for sure. They are not constantly dominant, but they are good enough to win a Super Bowl. That's what I've learned the last 3 weeks where they've won games, and they should beat Carolina again this weekend. Carolina is not very good. And then they get to a tougher schedule as the year goes on. But this is a favorable run that they're on in terms of schedule. They got to keep going.
Read J.R. Radcliffe in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He joins us every other Thursday to talk all things sports. Go Packs. Go Jays. Thank you, JR. We'll see you in a couple. Stay with us. When we return, we'll wrap up the show. This Shouldn't Be a Thing, Halloween edition, The Great Runaway Pumpkin. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, Calvinator on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can always join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Tomorrow is Halloween.
It's also Friday.
Friday already. Fridays, Dan Schaefer joins us. Civic Media's political editor and also the creator of the Recombobulation Area. He will be here at 9:30 to join us as we wade through all of the news.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be a lot to cover with Dan.
There'll be a lot to cover. And I just want to come back really quick to something we talked about in the first hour of the show regarding the food pantries and food drives.
And SNAP.
There are links in the show notes to food pantries around the state that you can find help if you need to, if you want to donate as well. And then also the Journal Sentinel story that we were referencing has resources in there on what to do to find the food drives themselves, because the pantry is always around. The drives are going to be happening this weekend. So if you want to be part of it in one way or the other, you can go to civicmedia.us/shows, look for the first hour of our show. And I think I entitled it something very, very simple, very, very easy called, Don't Tear Gas Kids on Halloween.
That's always a good idea.
You can find out more information by going to the show's website.
You can find all of our shows. We've got a good 2 months worth of archives at civicmedia.us. Just look at the top, click on shows, go to Matt Nair on Air. And Greg does a great job with the show notes, including links to articles that we talked about if you would like to look into things further. We wrap up the show like this every single day. Calvin, it is 10:54. That means it's time for
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
If you find a thing you think this should not be, send it in to Greg and me at Jane Says at civicmedia.us, JaneSays, Jane Says at civicmedia.us. This is from the Toronto Sun. We're doing Halloween-themed Tisbets this week. Calvin found this. Headline reads, "It kept blowing away. Runaway inflatable pumpkin spooks Ohio police." Police in Parma Heights, Ohio, went in pursuit of a runaway inflatable pumpkin after getting calls of a large orange object on the run. Body camera footage from the police department shows the inflatable pumpkin rolling down the street. Officers did eventually stop and detain the inflatable pumpkin Tuesday night. It still refused to answer any questions. The footage shows an officer holding on to the giant plastic gourd and saying to a colleague, "I was following it, but it kept blowing away."
I for me, like, this story only exists to be just hilarious. And for these poor police officers who said, like, "I didn't train to do this.
I wasn't trained for this." After they captured the giant inflatable pumpkin, multiple officers tried to deflate it, but failed. So they all had to work together to push the giant orange ball into the back of a police car. It's like trying to stuff a cream puff through a keyhole.
That is, does not one of you have a knife on you?
Poof, that would take care of it. One officer can be heard saying, "I've never seen that before," referring to the giant inflatable Halloween pumpkin packed tight in the squad car's back seat. The officers then drove it back to its home. That's why they didn't puncture it.
Oh, that's very nice.
So it can be enjoyed by all who pass through the neighborhood through the rest of the Halloween season. No one was injured. No tickets were issued.
Egos may or may not have been bruised.
A little burned by that.
It's unfortunate, but that's the life of a copper in, was it Toronto?
Parma Heights, Ohio.
Oh, we have audio from the chase. Audio from the chase, folks.
It keeps It keeps blowing away.
Hey, doesn't anyone have a knife? No, you can't cut it. It's got to go back to the Morgan household.
Oh, how I wish there had been video of them trying to stuff this thing into the back of the squad car.
At least, like, tie it down to the top.
Something.
And it would have lit up the pumpkin.
They could have put it on a string and just driven it behind them as it's floating behind them.
Inspiring the dreams of children everywhere.
That wraps up today's episode of...
This shouldn't be a thing.
By the way, Tiffany in River Falls listening in on WLAK in Amory. Greg, also remind folks their employers might offer matching donations. So if you make a donation to a food pantry, something, an organization like that, check with your employer. They might match your donation.
That would be amazing. Yes. Thank you very much, Tiffany.
Thanks for that, Tiffany. Appreciate it. Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers and everyone at Civic Media. Without you, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and texting and listening and watching on the stream. It genuinely means the world. I hope you find some joy today, even if it's just a little scooch, and you get the chance to share it. It's important. Keep it right here.
A scooch of joy.
A scooch of joy. Have a scooch of joy and spread it around. Yeah. It's good for us. Keep it right here. We have news coming up next, followed by Tom Hartman, Todd Alba, Maggie Dawn, Pete Schwabe, and Robert Pilot on Nightlight. Have a great day. We will see you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.